Why are so many dogs suffering from health issues? Actress Katherine Heigl, who's helped save over 16,000 dogs through her foundation, says she's seeing more issues with dogs' joints, odors, and health than ever before. And after doing a ton of research, she feels there's one place we can look to support any dog's health: their food. So she decided to create something she could actually feel good about feeding her dogs. It's called Superfood Complete. Superfood Complete is made with over 30 of the healthiest ingredients on the planet, including several superfoods vital to your dog's health. Badlands Ranch also sponsors the Jason Debus Heigl Foundation, which has helped rescue thousands of dogs and place them in loving homes. Dogs across America are trying this food and experiencing amazing health benefits. Go to badlandsranch.com/save50 and order right now to get up to 50% off your regular price order with a 90-day money-back guarantee. If you want your dog to experience all these incredible things, go to badlandsranch.com/save50 today.
The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
I'm Dan.
And I'm Alex.
And welcome back to On Air. Annyeonghaseyo, Alex.
Thank you very, very much. I believe you just gave me a flawless, effortless, accurate greeting in Korean. And I believe you did that because you know that I'm coming to you live from Seoul, South Korea.
No, you're... What?
Yeah.
I'm kidding. Okay. I know. Okay. I've been sending recommendations all day. This is very exciting because I feel like we talk about Asia so much, especially like off the podcast, we're kind of obsessed, but I'm there all the time. So I'm just like, when are you going? When is it happening?
Yeah.
Now you're finally there for the first time since the podcast launched. It's about time.
Yeah. So for the first time, well, I mean, the podcast is only 30 weeks old. This is our 30th, by the way. So congratulations to both of us because we are 30 weeks in. We're here. We're going strong. We've got a listener base and we are officially in the top 5% of all podcasts in the global rankings.
That's crazy.
In the global rankings, On Air is in the top 5%. That is a humble little achievement for a little project that you and I set out to launch just 30 weeks ago.
Yeah. Well, yeah, that we spoke about for a long time and launched 30 weeks ago. So I have a million questions for you. Yeah. I just kind of want to fire off whatever comes to my head first. So you flew there. We also always talk about how we, whenever we can, we avoid taking like flights that leave after midnight just because we're exhausted, the crew is exhausted. Yeah. But I know that flying from Qatar, where you were when we spoke last week, to Korea, it's like a 2 a.m. departure. How was that?
Yeah, so by the time we were airborne, it was 3 a.m. because the exact departure time is, I think, 2:40. So we were airborne around 3. Yeah, I mean, don't get me wrong, I was knackered, especially because, you know, I'm quite fixed in a routine when I'm not flying here, there and everywhere. So it was just an effort to even, just when I was at home and chilling, I was thinking, oh my God, I've still got another 2 hours before I leave. You know, I just wanted to leave so I could, you know, because it meant I could get going. But I mean, you know, you adjust, don't you? Got there really, really with like minimum time. I arrived 60 minutes before deliberately.
So it's like me all the time.
Yeah, exactly. And by the way, I don't recommend that if you're traveling internationally and you're not, you know, as settled in the home hub airport and usually you're going to need longer than that. Anyway, arrived 60 minutes before. And went straight to the aircraft, which was an A350-1000, which, as you know, is my favorite aircraft on Earth. Of course, Qatar Airways from Doha, and it is there once daily to Seoul, We were airborne around 3 a.m., as I said, and I was completely knackered with one thing on my wish list, which is to go straight to sleep. And that is exactly what I did. The moment we were airborne, the crew, who were great, made up the bed with all of the bedding that that they offer. And I got changed into pajamas. And I was even rushing as I was getting changed. I was like, come on, I need to sleep, I want to get to sleep.
I relate to and that luckily, so much.
Yeah, it's so weird, isn't it? Because every minute counts. And it does. He's saying, the crew was saying to me, you know, are you sure you don't want to eat? I'm like, in my head, I'm thinking, eat what? I mean, yeah, great. You've got an amazing menu, but it's 3 o'clock in the morning. Okay. It's neither dinner nor breakfast snack.
Sure, you don't want a fajita.
Yeah, no. And do you know what? They had such a, you know, usually nice, extensive menu. But anyway, I went straight to sleep and I slept for 7 hours solid of the 8 hour 45 minute flight. So that was good. And if I tell you what, even at 0.7 hour, I could have just kept going, but I was like, no, get up, because when I arrive in Korea, it's going to be 5 p.m. I've missed the whole day and the sun will set by the time I get out of Incheon Airport, which is exactly what happened.
Yeah.
And that, do you find, are you like this, right? When you fly, specifically when you fly east, I am craving daylight in order to just have my body recognize where I am, what time is it, what I'm supposed to be thinking. Like, I'm looking for the first available window.
Mm, I'm actually the exact opposite. If I fly east, I want to arrive as late in the afternoon or evening as possible so I can just go to bed. Because, I mean, maybe it's the difference of me going to bed earlier than you also generally. But
yeah,
I just want to, like, because when I was young and I used to fly back from New York, I would always, of course, take red eyes because that's how you get to Gothenburg. You can't take like the daytime flight to London because there's no connection. So then I would land in Gothenburg at like 9:10 a.m. And then you're like, okay, what am I supposed to do now? Often I would go straight to school and show up after lunch. And then you're a wreck all day. Like, I couldn't care less that there's sunshine let's be realistic. There's not much sunshine in Gothenburg, but that there's daylight outside.
Wow, a little bit of realism from Dan about Gothenburg. Are we hearing that, ladies and gentlemen? I think that's what we call progress, okay? Beautiful progress. That's what that was.
Yeah, anyway, so I feel a little bit different, but one thing you made me think of that I don't think we've ever acknowledged that is a huge pro for European and US airlines or North American airlines is the fact that they prepare for landing so late. I know we've spoken about this before, how you're on a red eye.
Yeah.
10 minutes before touchdown, you can be in bed and that's when they wake you up. Meanwhile, in the Middle East and Asia, airlines, the captain makes an announcement an hour before landing, and that's when they start preparing. Okay, seats upright. Let's take the bedding. Let's take the headphones. And you're just like, whoa. Like, I could have slept for 45 more minutes, but it's just different cultures, I guess.
I have to say, on this specific flight that I've just taken to Korea, because I for sure was the most low-key in terms of demands on board, so I didn't eat at all because I didn't even fancy. I just wanted to sleep, so I knew I would eat when I arrive. And I had a couple of snacks in my bag, you know, just in case, whatever. And so I told them to mark me as DND, do not disturb. So if you actually say to them, mark me as DND, then it's their own term that they know that they're not going to disturb unless I press the call button. And so I did continue sleeping, and I did sleep through that announcement from the flight deck. And continue. I'm glad that they just took the hint in getting everybody else ready for landing, because they've got, you know, a 3-course meal that needs tidying up. They've got this everywhere, that everywhere. Whereas for sure, I would just take a second. I'm going to, you know, at the most, just quickly need to go to the bathroom in order to get changed. So I have to hand it to them. They really did leave me until I was in the bathroom, in the lavatory. And as I stepped out and went back into the Q suite, she said, cabin crew commence final secure, which of course is the last phase, isn't it?
Yeah.
That's the last bit. So yeah, it wasn't too bad, but you're right. Otherwise, Asian carriers, Middle East carriers, it's like T-minus 55, and
then it's over.
We're landing now.
Yeah, and it's like, can I please have a drink? No, too late. Like, it's very, very strict like that in my experience. But, okay, what are you feeling after a day or two? I don't know how long you've been there. What are you feeling about Korea so far? I know you've been there before, first thoughts.
So this is my fourth time to South Korea. This is, though, the first time I've been back since the pandemic, as with many places.
Yeah.
So in that sense, it's good to see that not much has changed. Kind of heartbreaking when you go to a destination and you see how much has COVID wrecked in terms of, that used to be great, but it closed down, or that used to be the hotspot, but nobody goes anymore, but, you know, and all this. So as far as I can tell, nothing in that sense seems, and I've been here a few days now, nothing has seems to be that obviously have changed since the pandemic. I love Korea. You know, I love Korea because I just think I admire and massively respect and am intrigued and fascinated by the culture. I am categorically gripped all day by what is factually Asia's most stylish city. And boy, is it. I mean, the way everyone gets the memo. For me, I'm just constantly, and it's lucky that Koreans culturally, I mean, there's a lot of Asia is like this, but they tend not to be the starey kind at all. So they don't stare, right? They keep themselves to themselves and they're in their conversations and whatever. The reason I say that's lucky is because, boy, have I been staring for too long, admiring outfits. And I'm like, look at those baggy pants. Look at those Air Forces that I've never seen. Look at this. You know, and it's also, I love the simplicity that Koreans have with their outfits. So very rarely dizzy patterns or, you know, lines and dots and blah, blah, blah. It's all very Uniqlo, all very, very simple, effortless, smart, casual, millennial chic.
Yeah.
If I could come up with enough adjectives. And you know, because today while we were texting and you were giving me some more updated recommendations, which will bring me to the whole thing of you and Korea, by the way, shortly. I was sending you, Dan, how do they all get the memo? Dan, I don't understand. How is it so consistent? Funny quick story there before we get there. As soon as I landed, just to put things into context, in Qatar, or Qatar as a whole, there are only 300,000 Qataris. Okay, so there are only 300,000 Qataris on Earth. So while the population of Qatar is just above 2 million, the rest of those stats are made up by a variety of different nationalities, South Asians predominantly, and so on. But there are only 300,000 Qataris on Earth, right? In South Korea, but specifically in Seoul, the capital here, there's a population of 10 million, okay?
Yeah.
I arrive, I get into the car. We drive, you know, the drive from Incheon is around an hour
or so. It's long.
It feels so long. Why? It's because of that long flight, doesn't it? I mean, I know everyone has to do this when they go to Heathrow or even, you know, Charles de Gaulle-ish, but Incheon feels so far. Anyway, I'm in the car. The first red light we come to in metropolitan area of Seoul, and it's busy and something, I want to take it in. I put my window down thinking, okay, let's get my first glimpse of Koreans post-pandemic. Okay.
What are you expecting?
Who's walking towards me at zebra crossing? Qatari, I know, from Doha. I'm like, what? Are you for real? What? I think I politely said to him that I hadn't flown 10 hours to only be faced with him on arrival.
You were like, Akbar, what are you doing here?
No, it was not Akbar. It was not Akbar. It's a gentleman called Michelle. Anyway, he was here on vacation. But what are the odds? It's a population of 10 million.
Those
it's
kind
insane.
Of coincidences are always like, it makes you wonder, like, okay, there's something bigger out here because this... How did this happen?
There's something weird going on. I'm like, who did that? I'm texting you. Is this you, stupid? Do you think this is funny?
It's British Airways gate handling, getting their revenge.
Oh my God, you're so salty about that. I'm actually worried how much that's on your mind because I do think there's like a folder in your laptop. Okay, and we know what you're like with laptops. And remember when you came to Doha a few weeks ago and I found Oscar on my laptop. Are we remembering that? And I said, oh, Oscar, that's not my laptop. Like, of course it's not. And he goes, oh, yeah. And until today, I have no idea what he was doing on it.
It wasn't because we recorded the video. It was on your laptop.
Excuses. Honestly, I've just wound myself up. I was in a good mood until a second ago.
Okay, anyway, let's go back.
Korea. So listen, you lived here.
Yes, for half a year.
So you did 6 months here, right?
Well, not quite, but yeah, like a fall semester.
Okay, well, yeah. I mean, you know, forgive me for thinking you did 6 months when you said, yeah, half a year. And then I repeat 6 months. Let's not get into specifics.
It was 2 days.
And then you're
like,
okay. Okay, right. Okay. Were you here for over 5 months?
No. It was 4 months.
Sorry. What calendar do you follow where 8 months is a year
it's
and
half
four
a
is
school
half?
Year. Half a school year.
Okay, frat boy. Sorry, I don't speak in fraternity.
Yeah, you know, some
calendar
of us went to
language.
College.
My gosh.
Anyway,
right.
Yes,
you spent
that was in 2018.
A long while here. How was that?
How was it in one word or what?
Yeah, I mean, we're all curious. No. Am I correct in saying that your experience visiting is far, far different to that of 100%. Actually day-to-day living?
Yeah, yeah, I mean, I should
I've read
say
that
on
all the forums.
So I should say that I think the reason it feels like we were there a very long time is that Oscar and I lived off campus. We had our own apartment. We were renting on Airbnb. It was no expats in that area. We had to figure everything out ourselves. Like the school did not help whatsoever. So we really felt like we are living in Seoul. Like we are having to figure out their insanely strange trash system where you're only allowed to throw out certain items certain days per week and you have to put them in the correct bin on that day, and everything is only in Korean. People, there were so many interesting challenges. It was definitely the most difficult place we've ever lived in terms of trying to figure things out. And that's what I also find very cool about Korea, is that things don't work the same as they do anywhere else. Like you look at Japan and Korea and China to some extent, they're like some of the only countries in the world that truly have, they don't really want the Americanization. Like they are doing their own thing. They have their own entertainment, their own apps for everything, their own map apps.
I respect
their own,
that. I respect that a lot. It's, you know, there's such originality and authenticity to all of that.
Exactly. I mean, the reason in Korea, for example, that you can't use Google Maps or that it doesn't work correctly is that it's actually for safety related to North Korea and stuff. So they want their own app so they can control what shows and what not. But there's so many of those types of things that it's just like, even when we go back there now, which we try to go at least one time a year, sometimes more, we have to reprogram our brain back to that, to be like, oh yeah, so we need to download that app, that, you know, like Kakao Maps, which shows us the accurate subway, because Google Maps, maybe they do nowadays, but they didn't back in the day.
No, it's not. I've struggled today. I keep forgetting. Do you know what I've been doing? Just to, not necessarily how to get to places, but in order to judge the distance, sometimes I can't, you know, I can't remember. Okay, when I used to go there, how far is that from here? I go into Google Maps, can't see it. Okay, it just shows me NA, like not or whatever. And so then I've been going to Waze, and Waze tells me how far it is in the car. Yeah, but I'm just getting an idea. If it's 5 minutes in the car, I can walk it. It's not far, even if it's 10 minutes, whatever. Yeah. So, that's how I've been
That's interesting.
I need that app that you just said.
Yeah, Kakao Maps. Check it out. But it's all in that's Korean, good pretty much. So, like, that's the thing. It's wonderful. But it's fascinating. And that's, like, I really feel like you notice it in their aviation sector as well, because Japan's aviation sector is very famous. Japan, of course, gets more tourists, is more just familiar with having foreigners there since they have a longer history of tourism. But Korea, this like burst in or explosion in popularity is really quite recent. So there's so many things that like don't really align, like trying to book a flight on Asiana. I've flown Asiana many times. I was trying to book a flight on them a month ago and it still took me like an hour because they wouldn't accept this payment and this, like all these things that are just so unique to how things work there. And then, oh, wait, how do I request a special meal? And they make it super complicated. And you're like, oh, this is so frustrating. But then you realize it's not because the airline is bad. It's just because it's really catered to Koreans and Korea's systems, you know?
Yeah. And that's definitely today. I had a couple of moments where I was wandering around and thinking, you know, wow, to even begin thinking about, you know, opening up a bank account here and getting yourself registered with some kind of ID for residency and things like that. That's intimidating anywhere in the world. And that always feels kind of foreign and difficult until you do it. And then you say, okay, that wasn't so bad. But I've read about how trying to integrate from outside in terms of the administrative hoops that you have to jump through is incredibly, incredibly difficult. And the good thing about you is you've been able to set the scene and draw it back to the wider context of, it comes down to, this is the Korean way. Not everything works in the US models that, like it or not, we're all basically following in many other parts of the world, even the Middle East, you know, it's much more, you know, much more US systematic than anything like this.
Yeah. And we have, 100%. So what about, I want to hear a little bit more. We're going to get into news, but I just want to hear okay, food. Have you had any Korean food yet?
Of course.
What did you think about the places I recommended?
So you sent me some great recommendations. What's the name of the place that I went to today for the first time, which was that little village?
Yeah. So, okay, first of all, I don't know. Did you go to Insadong Street, which is close to there, but it's this walking street it's just one street compared to the village I sent you, but that's like really a very popular place with shops, kind of fun things going on, some museums,
that type
of thing.
Yes, I did. Yes, I did. And that was just a short walk away from Ikseondong Hanok Village, right?
Great pronunciation. Right? Yeah, exactly. Ikseondong, I think is how we pronounce it.
Ikseondong, Hanok Village. So that was that trendy suburb style village thing with everyone dining outside
and the cutest cafes,
the Korean barbecues and amazing cafes. I was half expecting to find one of these, like, this is a puppy cafe where you have a puppy with your... I really did kind of look into a couple thinking, I feel like we're close to that. But I didn't say anything. But it was a very cool vibe. And I like you said to me, please go here tomorrow. You know, you sent me a whole bunch of recommendations. You said, you're going to really like this one.
Yeah.
And when I went, within 10 minutes, I texted you and I was saying, this is really cool. And somewhere new. I hadn't been there before in Seoul. And, you know, this is my fourth time, but I actually hadn't been there.
Yeah.
Some of the other places you had sent on the list I've already been to, but would, of course, go back and plan to. Other than that, I mean, obviously, I've had quite a bit of work stuff while I've been here. So that takes up the majority of the day until around 3 p.m.
Yeah.
And then from 3 p.m., I'm out and I'm going to all my favorite spots and I'm taking the same pictures that I've got on my phone four times over, but feel like I've got to take again.
Your Facebook and then profile picture for the longest time was from Korea. Is it still?
Do you know what? I have not been on Facebook maybe in years, but my profile picture is still Korea. Yeah.
Okay, time to take just take the same picture, but it's the 2024 version of you.
Yeah, I should. You know, it's the food has been great. I love the Korean barbecue chicken. I love kimchi. I love all of the quirky little desserts or buns or donuts. And also I've had I was just rushing back now to the hotel so we can get recording, because I've been out buying everything on Demi's wish list because my sister has a Korean beauty list apparently in her phone ready for me to arrive. And she said to me, look, she said, if you don't have to specifically find these yourselves, I'm sure that'll be helpful. And they really were. I was literally showing her a screenshot. It's amazing, the willingness. I love the willingness. She is walking to go and get it. And she's like, starts speed walking and running. She starts running to get it off the shelf and then come back to me. Like, it's a game. Like, she's so eager. And then they're playing an announcement above, translating it into English. And they're saying, we will give you the best service. We hope you have the best time. I'm like, it's a pharmacy. Yeah. You guys are amazing.
I know. It makes it hard to go anywhere else after you've been to East Asia.
Yeah. Yeah. We're talking about you, Europe.
And let's leave it at that.
So yeah, you know, when you are here, do you, for example, if you're here for 4 days, will you stay in Seoul for 4 days, or will you go to Busan, will you go to
Seoul? You could stay in Seoul for so long. Like, you could go for 10 days and there's still so, like, you've just scratched the surface. We went to Busan for the first time last year. Busan is beautiful. Okay. Love it.
I've heard.
So highly recommend that. We went to Jeju, which is like, you know, Seoul to Jeju Island, an island south of Korea, is the world's busiest flight route. Pre-pandemic, there was a flight every 5 minutes between Seoul Gimpo Airport and Jeju. So we flew there. I flew there twice when Korean Air had the 747 from Seoul to Jeju on like a 45-minute flight.
Oh my God, that's so cool.
It's so, so cool. And that was a 747 followed by an A330 5 minutes later, followed by an A737 5 minutes later, followed by another A330. It was just insane. So like, you really had to pinpoint the right one. But we were very unlucky with the weather in Jeju. So we need to go back. But yeah, Seoul... You can definitely see.
By the way, I'm
surprised
how cold it's been here.
I mean,
yeah, the temperature is much lower than I expected. No, but much lower. Well, the day I arrived was almost 30 degrees. Okay, great. Yeah. 30 degrees Celsius, hot. Okay, lovely. Then the next day it was 11.
Okay, wow. That sounds
like. Today was also 11, felt like 7. I don't have a jacket. Thick enough. I've been doubling up on like a hoodie and a jacket on top.
Yeah.
Not, you know, it's not cold, but it is if you're out for a long time without. So yeah, it's that in between season, isn't it?
But isn't it kind of nice to get like a little bit of refreshing air now and then?
100%. And it's refreshing and it's, you know.
Yeah.
It's, yeah. The haze that I used to associate with Seoul is still definitely here though. Like, I haven't seen a crisp
It's always
blue
there in
sky.
The spring. The spring, for some reason, the air kind of, it blows in from China, actually. And then, yeah.
Well, do you know what? I was looking at it today and I was thinking, is this smog? I don't, you know. Or is it haze? Like, is it pollution?
Yeah, it's pollution and, usually.
Great.
Usually. Yeah.
That's why they're all wearing masks.
Yeah, exactly. That's it. Okay, so speaking of you flying east... you flew east. This has not been a very good week to fly from east to west if we're talking about Asia or Australia. And why is that, Alex?
Well, look, let's get to what happened. We were about to do an emergency podcast, weren't we? When Iran struck Israel, you did text me.
I woke up and was like, oh my God, we need to talk.
But
now.
When you woke up, I had just gone to bed because I was awake the whole night handling and dealing with all of these developments and so on, and broadcasting and monitoring everything and so on and so on. So for anyone that hasn't been across or is unfamiliar to what we are talking about, on Saturday night, last Saturday, as was widely expected, because Iran had informed some countries' embassies about their movements, they had telegraphed many hints. Well, actually, they had outright telegraphed what their intentions were, that on Saturday night, Iran were going to strike Israel directly for the first time in history, which is why it would be so significant. So Iran say that they were striking Israel in response to what happened on the 1st of April, which is when Israel had... struck an Iranian consulate building in Damascus in Syria, which killed senior Iranian commanders. And then the whole thing starts escalating from there. Right. We put the politics of it all to one side and we wonder, how is this impacting aviation? How did this impact aviation? Well, the moment on Saturday evening where everything started to come into fruition, and we started to see announcements coming from Tehran that they had launched missiles that would arrive in Israel over the course of the coming hours, aviation has to come forward with various different responses. And then suddenly it was chaos because Iraq closed its airspace, Jordan closed its airspace, Lebanon closed its airspace. Iran kept its airspace open but was not accepting commercial flights. And you suddenly had a key overflight area, such as the area that includes the airspace of Iraq and Iran, off limits to all commercial air traffic. And this is an area of the world where even if you're not flying to or from the Middle East, but you're going, for example, from even somewhere like here in South Korea, direct to Paris or to Madrid or to London and so on and so on, you are typically most carriers going to be overflying at least somewhere near to the airspaces of Iraq and Iran. And so international aviation had to adjust immediately to very sudden closures, which caused all kinds of diversions, requirements for technical stops, aircraft needed extra fuel. You had planes that were just minutes away from Iraq's airspace. Iraq's airspace closes. Aircraft start doing U-turns at 38,000 feet and then coordinating with our airline headquarters as to where do they go, what do they do, have they got enough fuel to be able to track south, go through Egypt, cross Saudi Arabia, and then stay underneath Iran, hugging Abu Dhabi and the coast before going across towards Pakistan and India. Are they even able to do so with the number of hours that the crew have worked on board, and so on and so on. And so we had a bit of a wild night for aviation last Saturday night, didn't we?
Yeah. And it goes back to one of our first podcast episodes, I think, when we were talking about it was Niger's airspace that had closed, or what it was, right?
Yeah. In so it was the coup attempt, I think, of Niger, and how the airspace there is also a key overflight area for any air traffic going from anywhere in the world down to South Africa.
Yeah.
And so, you know, you might think, okay, well, I'm not holidaying in Niger anytime soon, so why is that relevant? But suddenly it was relevant. You had BA making U-turns, Virgin Atlantic having to divert, and so on. So we've also spoken, haven't we, in a previous episode about how intertwined geopolitics is with commercial air travel. And that's why it fascinates me so much, because aviation is inherently exposed to just about everything, but boy, is it vulnerable to geopolitics.
Yeah. So luckily, Nigeria's airspace has reopened. That's a separate thing, long ago. But it feels really scary to me how when we were young, pretty much all airspace was like, open, you're welcome to fly here. We grew up during a very, very stable time. But now all
agreed.
Of a sudden things are just, you know, popping off here and here. And we see more and more airspaces becoming unavailable. Like, for example, airlines still aren't flying over Sudan, which is a huge airspace that airlines are having to avoid, fly around. Okay. But then you look in the Middle East, airlines don't fly over Afghanistan. Well, not quite the Middle East, but that region. Airlines don't fly over Yemen. There's already quite a few no-go zones. Syria, most airlines don't fly over. Many airlines also don't fly over Israel. So then, suddenly, Iran is firing missiles. Many airlines were already avoiding Iran prior to that. But suddenly, most airlines fly through Iraqi airspace. It's a vital route to get anywhere.
It is.
That closes, and suddenly it's like, What do you do now? Finnair's flights from Doha to Scandinavia were taking 2 hours longer than they were the day before because they had to take the southern route over Saudi. So I was just like, oh no. First, I'm always thinking about poor Finnair. I'm like, not them again. Like, they already have it bad enough.
They can't catch a break.
Literally, like, come on.
I think Finnair operations team just get shivers and goosebumps when they see in their operations center the word airspace restricted, you know, flash up. Because, of course, the context to that is that, you know, Finnair's entire business plan was built on accessing Russian airspace, which they no longer have access to because of the war in Ukraine. So, yeah, it's you're right. I mean, it was so for example, for a few days, several flights from Doha to the US, including destinations New York JFK, Atlanta, LA, were having to make fuel stops en route.
Yeah.
And that wasn't just the night of the chaos on Saturday night. It was Sunday and Monday. You had flights on the night from London to, for example, to Doha. They diverted to Istanbul. They diverted to different areas to refuel and then start tracking south through Saudi, as you said. Interestingly, Emirates were using Iranian airspace throughout. And so even during the chaos, if there was an aircraft in Iranian airspace, and again, Iranian airspace didn't close, it's just everyone chose to avoid it and you couldn't land there. Emirates had made a decision, for whatever reason that was, that they could continue to fly at a higher altitude over and across Iran. So this will always come down to a risk assessment for airlines, but the majority tend to move away from such risk, you know, wherever they can and do so quite quickly. Because, look, at the end of the day, the Middle East is used to instability, right, over decades and decades and decades, way, you know, long before we were born. But what is relatively new still is the way in which we fly and the frequency of flights and the schedules that are so ambitious. You're talking Gulf carriers that have 600 to 700 flights per 24-hour period. And you're their key airspace areas, the ones that are always at risk of being closed because of God knows what, tension and escalation, are literally the approach path yeah. to their respective hubs, you know, so...
Yeah, and that, I have to say, is like actually a great strength for Riyadh Air and for any airline in Saudi, because they can sort of use the tunnel created by their country. Oman is very stable. Egypt, at least, doesn't seem like it's going to have any issues for the foreseeable future. So they have sort of a good tunnel there, while Kuwait Airways like especially, but...
everyone in the Middle East would just... Egypt doesn't seem like it's going to have any problems for the foreseeable future, which is a polite British way of saying Egypt's not going to have any issues until it does.
I feel like you never know with anywhere nowadays.
You don't know. Yeah. But interesting what you said about Riyadh, that is true.
Yeah, I mean, it is maybe, like a bit of an advantage, because even if they're going to like West Coast US, it's a big difference to be there compared to Dubai. Because they can at least fly out over Egypt and then north, as opposed to having to take like an hour and a half extra to get to Riyadh to then continue past Egypt and north.
Perhaps we should suggest to Tony Douglas, the CEO, that maybe the brand is not Riyadh. Remember he said the brand is Riyadh, the brand is Riyadh, the brand is Riyadh. Maybe we'll do him once like the brand is stability.
The brand is Saudi airspace.
Airspace independence. The brand is airspace efficiency, self-sufficiency.
Totally. And it's still interesting now to look which airlines are using Iraqi airspace again. Because obviously all these airspaces reopened this like within less than a day after they closed. So now you have Lufthansa Group, for example, using Iraqi airspace, but Finnair still avoiding it. So you have, even within Europe, different airlines choosing different strategies. I wonder what they base that on, because if anyone should be using it, again, it's poor Finnair, not Lufthansa Group.
So we need to buy you a violin, okay? And you play it every time you mention little Finnair, the little Finnish carrier that could.
Yeah, that's how I feel. Like, I couldn't care less about SAS, but I'm like, Finnair.
Instead of treating Finnair as this, you know, global, you know, revenue hungry beast that they are in Finland, you think that they became the national airline by accident.
They were the underdog somehow.
They were the underdog. When I think there would be somebody knocking at the door wanting to declare themselves the underdog. And do you know what? I hope they didn't just do that on the wall where there's someone on the other side of the wall, because it's very late here. Goodness. No, I don't think there's anyone in the room next though.
Hopefully.
It's bad enough. Earlier today, I was doing the key card, wouldn't work, doing the key card, wouldn't work, doing the key card, wouldn't work. I was rattling the front door, doing the key card, and then I was like, oh,
no,
shit, this is not my room.
Oh, God. That is the worst. Sometimes I've done that. Like with apartments. So like in New York, I'll go to the, like, the floor underneath, or I'll get off at the wrong floor because someone pressed or whatever. I just go and open the door. And then I'm like, oh, no. Oh my God, this is not the right apartment. Oh, that's horrible.
In Montreal once, I checked into my hotel, got to the room, and it had a interconnecting door, which, you know, bothers me from the beginning, right?
Yeah.
Because, sure, why not link me up with the, you know, whoever's next door? Right, so I can hear... I can hear this, like, a woman. I can hear the murmurings of a woman on a phone, I assume, right? Could have been the TV there. Anyway, I get into the room, and as is normal, I need to make sure that that door is locked. But the lock was really funny. For example, if I kept locking it, so rolling it to the left, it kept rolling and rolling and rolling. Yeah. It didn't stop. So I was like, is this locked? So I'm doing it and doing it and doing it. So I'm like, right, I'm going to unlock it. So I unlock it and then open the door. And I'm faced, of course, with the other door, which is controlled by the room next door. And then I push that handle down to make sure that that door is locked, right? Then I hear the phone call stop, right? And I was like, okay. So I saw it was locked. So I said out loud, you know, I, even though there was no one with me in the room, I was like, okay, good. Yeah, I'm making sure it's locked. You know, I wanted to hear what I wanted her to hear. Anyway, so I shut the door and I'm locking it, thinking, okay, that's now locked. Then I get a knock at the door about 10 minutes later and I look through the spy hole and it's two big security guards. And I was like, hello? And they said, yeah, they're like, Mr. Macheras, we just got a report that you were trying to access the room next to you. A lady called us concerned for her safety. We want to ask you, sir, what were you thinking? I was like, no. And I said it so loud so she could hear. I said, I'm the paranoid one. I wanted to make sure. I was like, look at this lock. Look. And he's like, it's okay. I'm like, no. I'm going to demonstrate for you. I'm not having. Also, then I thought, if she's worried about me, then we're both as safe as can be.
Exactly.
You have, you know, if I'm only the threat, wonderful, happy days.
Yeah, she should have taken one look at you and been like, okay, he's my friend, not some predator.
I didn't want to come face to face with her, obviously, but...
Yeah.
But yeah. Anyway, look how we get sidetracked. I knocked on the door and I was knocking saying, Finnair is not the little airline that could. The little airline that could is...
Is
not far from where you're from.
What? Bra.
No. Oh, please. The little airline that couldn't.
Which one is it?
Air Baltic.
Oh, that's true. That's true.
They are the little airline that could. Yeah. We need to get Martin, the CEO, on the podcast. I'll message him.
That would be great. We actually need to get Finnair's new CEO also. But
I'll see if I can get Toppy to connect to me. Toppy Manor, the former CEO, who is no longer at the company, unfortunately.
But so how should people think about booking flights, choosing airlines right now? Because even though I fly that route, like I fly over Iraq all the time, a small part of me, when I was flying KLM down to the region a couple of weeks ago, and I saw we were taking the southern route because I noticed why are we over Greece and not over Istanbul? And then, we're taking the route over Egypt and Saudi Arabia. A part of me, of course, was like, okay, phew. Like, even though I know it's not bad to fly over Iraq, it just felt nice to know in Saudi airspace, I feel safe.
Right. Well, there's... Riyadh Air's marketing complete and done.
In Saudi airspace, I feel safe. Yeah. You cannot take
declares
that without
YouTube's nonstop Dan. Can I just distance myself from that? I've got nothing to do with any statements declaring any airspace is 100% fine.
No. But
you raise a serious point. I mean, I would have faith in the airline that I'm booking, so I would book an airline that I want, that I trust, in that they are going to be responsive during these times. And 99.999% of the time, airlines are incredibly responsive in terms of exercising real caution when it comes to the first sign of, okay, is that an escalation? Whew, airspace is suddenly emptied out. Usually by the time an airspace closes, nobody's using it anyway. In this scenario on Saturday night, there were still a few aircraft that were actually in airspace and they had to, you know, continue their way out of it on the other side. But I would say it's nothing to be I don't think it's anything that you have to be personally concerned about, and you leave it to the airline to make those assessments that they are doing all the time for every single part of your journey, okay? At the same time, I can hear someone saying to me, yeah, but why would I put myself in a position where there's tensions in the Middle East? If I don't need to transit via the Middle East, why would I do that? And of course, that is absolutely your right, you know, to exercise your choice. If you're just simply choosing to transit, and the idea of transiting in the Middle East in these times makes you uneasy, then you know, exercise your right to choose and choose somewhere else. But I would say don't treat the whole thing as one block. You know, yeah. For example, Iran and Israel is not the Gulf. The Gulf is not, for example, the smaller Gulf states are very different to Saudi Arabia. Saudi Arabia is nothing like Jordan. And each of them have such different geopolitics that it would be naive to treat the whole thing as one. And that's why I always sometimes roll my eyes when I see on the screen.
Why you know, always Middle sometimes? Ten...
sorry. Why? Yeah, sorry, I'm tired. It's really late here. Yeah. Why I very often roll my eyes when I see Middle East tensions on the screen, because I'm like, well, you're talking about a very... It's almost like them saying, you know, Europe tensions. It would never happen.
Yeah.
Because it's just considered to be 2 minutes. So, yeah, I think, you know, I understand both sides, basically. I understand those that you know, you trust your airline to make those decisions for you like they're all the time. Or if you're put off by what you see right now and you've got a choice, then choose something that doesn't put you off personally. That's about your own feeling. It's not about kind of the logic of the situation.
Yeah, and you can always try to see it as something. Like, for example, if I were to fly a Gulf carrier to the West Coast, like you did, flying over Russia, I would try to view that as like, oh, well, this is kind of interesting because I can get a peek of Russia from above right now, even though I'm not going to visit. It's kind of like a little, ooh, like, what's out there? Which I try to view things from a positive lens when I can.
My friends who are pilots have to go to Russia all the time, and they're there often. And I can assure you that Russia today is just like Russia before. there's not anything that I don't think that you would be seeing from the top of the aircraft
look
at it now, Mom.
Yeah. I mean, more, it's not the same thing to visit as an American, for example. One other story from this week. I don't know if you came across this. We haven't really discussed this, but did you see the viral story about a woman who was getting a ton of backlash, a Delta Diamond Medallion member who had been posting online about crew who are on their phone when they weren't supposed to. She was bragging about, oh, she's getting so many points, like his compensation. But then the world turned on her.
So they were compensating, the airline was compensating her because she was grassing on by sending photos of cabin crew that were using their personal phones during the flight, and Delta would say, we're really sorry, here's a bunch of miles. Is that right?
Yeah, so basically Delta cabin crew are not supposed to use their phone, their personal phones in flight. So she would take a photo, send it to the airline, you know, supposedly looking out for the airline. So this has started a lot of debate, mainly against her, of course, for doing this. And it's an interesting situation because the US certainly, at least in my view, is one of the most relaxed places in the world when it comes to cabin crew, what behavior is permitted or that type of thing. So this flyer at Delta really like took it into her own hands and was like, no, I'm going to set the standard here.
Yeah, I don't know how I feel about this, to be honest, because the crew shouldn't be on their phones. But also, I don't like the fact that this became this woman's hobby to deliberately, you know, get miles by trading in, you know, someone's career for her 5,000 miles or so on and so on. She's obviously not genuinely bothered by it. It's just because she's somehow rewarded, therefore she's incentivized to do it because she knows what she's going to get in the end. But it's funny how the world turned on her, because did I read correctly that she's an author and everyone was rating her book really poorly online?
No, I don't think that's her main job. Let me see if I can find it. But she had written a book as well that basically people were slamming. The book was about
like mobile phones and the relationship with cabin crew.
Yeah. So my take on this is that I think she went over the line. I don't think someone sitting on their phone alone warrants this type of reaction. Like, it depends on the circumstances, what they're doing in addition. Are they doing their job? Are they keeping the cabin safe? Are they, you know, doing responding to call bells, that type of thing? If they're not doing that and just sitting on their phone, then yeah, you can report it. But it's already such a tough job where you face so many difficult situations that I feel like it goes a bit far. You know, there are situations, yes, where it makes sense to report crew, but I think this is not one of them. The way it really goes too far is posting it and bragging about it on social media.
Most of the scenarios, she was sneaking a picture into, you know, the corner, like zooming into the corner of the galley where the crew was sat, for example, during the descent, the final approach, and were on their phones behind the binder, or the, yeah, you know, the folder on their lap. And it's like, really, you know, all that for some miles. Hey, here's an idea. She should join your master plan, your master course, whatever it's called, right? And then she'll know how to maximize her points value. She'll know how to buy points because that's what you do.
Yep.
And she won't have to dob in Delta flight attendants.
Totally. And I think that, does she deserve all this backlash and people, you know, destroying their reviews on her book and everything? Probably not, but she was kind of asking for it.
Yeah. Listen, we are going to wrap up. We invite questions for next week so we can have a Q&A session. So please do feel free to send in any of your questions. But before we fully wrap up, I want to quickly read one question that I received this evening, just so that the guy gets the right info ASAP and doesn't have to wait another week for it. Hey, Alex, love the podcast. His name is Oliver, by the way. So he says, his name is Olivia. Mm. He says, hey, Alex, love the podcast. I am planning a trip to Paris from Dublin for the end of the year. Is it worth it to fly Air France economy for double the price of Ryanair? He puts in brackets, I've only flown on low-cost airlines, so wanting to try something new. You go first.
Well, to me, it's a question of what is the price? Because if it's like 50 euros for Ryanair or 100 for Air France, of course choose Air France. But if it's 300 for Ryanair and 600 for Air France, then no, I'm not paying that. I would pay about, you know, in just in number terms, I would pay maybe 100 euros extra to fly a full service airline. After that, it gets a bit more difficult. And yeah, you really need to calculate it yourself. What do you
think?
I'm
with Dan fully. I'm with you. I'm with you on this. I think if it starts to get into territory where you're paying a lot and you're paying, as you said, double for Air France, I'm like, save your money and go for a nice meal somewhere in the Jardin area, you know, nice view, and know that you didn't just basically experience Ryanair in a different livery on a different aircraft. Yeah. Air France. C'est la vie.
C'est la vie. Although okay. I will say, I think that Air France is one of the best airlines to fly within Europe. Just small note there. But yeah, it all depends on the price.
I think Aegean will be knocking on the door as we speak.
I said also one Swiss. Of one.
Airline here, that could. Hey, what about
here comes
Finnair?
The Swiss Finnair, apologist. Right? No. For me, for me, I'm team Air France over Swiss any day, unfortunately. For
Swiss give you beautiful Swiss chocolate, and I am a sucker for Swiss chocolate, so be it. With that, yeah, we will see you next week. Thank you for being part of our 30th episode. Thank you for being the reason that we are in the top 5% of the podcast global rankings.
Yes.
And we look forward to seeing you next week.
Alex, have an amazing time in Korea. We can't wait. We'll
Thank
answer
you.
So many questions next week. We promise, guys.
Yeah.
We've saved so many. So yeah, we will see you all next week on air. Bye-bye.
See you later. Good night from Korea.
Save big money on your next outdoor project at Menards. Menards has the best in-stock selection of AC2 pressure-treated lumber. Our huge inventory of decking, fencing, lumber, and timbers are all easy to load in our drive-thru lumber yard. Plus, you can get free estimates fast with our fence and deck design programs in-store or online at Menards.com. Don't forget to check out our weekly flyer for all the great deals happening now. Save big money at
Menards. Fall's here, and so are incredible sales at Tanger Outlets. Find must-have handbags, footwear, and all the latest fall arrivals, all at unbeatable savings. Shop top brands like Nike Factory, Crocs, J. Crew Factory, Coach, Gap Factory, Old Navy Outlet, Under Armour, and even more brands you love. Save more every time you shop with deals up to 70% off. Tanger Outlets, always on trend, always on sale. Plan your trip at tanger.com.